Sports Ethos New York Knicks podcast, Andre Gallagher. Boy, there are wins and then there are wins. I know I tweeted it out before the game with the losses the Knicks were taking. And again, some of those losses you can understand and we prognosticated wins and losses going back a couple weeks. That San Antonio loss, that's not accounted for. That Bulls loss, not really accounted for. I can't remember exactly. I think I gave the Bulls one of those games. But it almost doesn't kind of matter now because the Knicks, they lost all of the games that were kind of questionable too, right? Miami and OKC, you lost both of those games, right? So whereas what it started at was back, I think it was like 10, 11 games ago, it was the Knicks have maybe 3-4 losses and they could be the 3 seed, but potentially the 2 seed, but I think we were focused on the 3. And they had gotten to 3 losses and then they had gotten to 4 losses. So it's bonus territory now. It's bonus territory. Right? You're talking San Antonio, OKC, Miami, the Bulls. That's 4 losses right there. That's it. That's all they had. And if you look at the standings, that played out. Because if you look at the standings and how it is, right? Orlando right now, Orlando's ahead of the Knicks because they tied and they got the tiebreaker. So, you know, that's playing out. And the Cavs are a half game behind. And the Cavs have 3 games left on the schedule. That played out exactly how I said. It really did. Just looking at how, you know, predicting wins and losses. It played out exactly kind of how I said. And the Knicks are like, they're kind of out of lives. They're out of lives. They're out of lives for, and I'm going to come back to this, so bear with me. For the 2 seed and the 3 seed, they're out of lives. Now, asterisk on the 2 seed is the Bucks are fully wetting the bed and shitting their pants. So who knows what the Bucks are going to end up being. They're a variable here. So who knows what their situation is going to be. They don't have cupcakes mostly for the rest of the season. They can literally lose every game for the rest of the season. I'm not saying they will, but they could. So they're a variable here. But the 2 seed is out, not because the Bucks are free-falling, but because you're still competing with the Cavs and Orlando, and lowest of keys, you're kind of competing with the Pacers as well. So the Knicks are out of lives. So once they got to, I believe it was the 4th loss, right? That's like, that was kind of like their limit. But because the Cavs and Orlando both lost to Charlotte, give them credit. They both lost to Charlotte. That kind of gave the Knicks a little bit of breathing room. And that's the only reason why they're still in this mix is because of those 2 losses to Charlotte. Orlando's loss and the Knicks lost. I mean, and the Cavs lost. That's the only reason why they're still in the mix. If it wasn't for those 2 losses that were unexpected, the Knicks would be done for the 3 and the 4th seed. It would just be really the 5th seed or the 6th seed. They, you know, even though we have games left and things can still play out, but if you're just looking at the numbers, they would be done. Because the Knicks have, coming into the night, you thought the Knicks had at least 2 losses left on the schedule. That's why this game was so huge. Because what this game did is it took almost a guaranteed loss off the Knicks' jacket against the Bucks on the road. They pulled this win out. And that's not a win that you could predict. And it makes up for one of the losses. So the Knicks really have 1 loss on the schedule that you say that's a probable loss. And that's this next game against the Celtics. Right? And again, we're not predicting the future. We're playing probabilities. There's no guarantee they're going to beat the Bulls and the Nets for the rest of the season, right? But you have to assume that if there's a loss staring at you, it's the Celtics game. But you had to assume the Bucks was a loss too. It was a huge win because it stole back one of those wins the Knicks, or losses that the Knicks really couldn't afford to take. It stole it back and it kept them in contention. So I tweeted this up before the game, and I said, win or lose in this Bucks game, the Knicks really have two losses to stay in the mix. They get that third loss, they're free falling. Right? They're free falling. Now let's break it down a little bit here. The Cavs have, actually, let's just talk about the Bucks game for a minute. The Bucks seem like they were unstoppable offensively because of Giannis in that first half. The referee's still not giving the Knicks enough calls. You're seeing these ticky-tack calls against Dame, and then you're seeing full contact against Brunson, and you're not getting any calls. It's kind of maddening to see these guys keep marching to the line with these free throws and getting calls the Knicks aren't getting. And this whole talk about Brunson hunting fouls and all of that, there's some truth to it. There's no question there's some truth to it, but I've seen him put in the same category as Harden and Trae Young, and that's BS, especially Trae Young, because these are two guys that as soon as they get contact, they're just flailing. Now, Brunson doesn't do that, right? Does he hunt contact? Yes, but he doesn't do the nonsense that those guys do. Not even close, right? Not even close. They're not taking good shots. They're not taking their shots. What they're doing is waiting till you put your hands in the cookie jar and then just throwing something up. And that's more what Dame does. And Dame was being rewarded for it. It was nonsense. But what you were seeing is in the first half, you weren't seeing the Knicks find open people in or around the rim. I shouldn't say in the rim, at or around the rim in that first half. And they were struggling shooting the ball. And in that second half, the same thing that has been the feather in the Knicks cap for the last few weeks is Brunson being an all-out MVP caliber player. He's to me, he's only second in MVP. He's second. It's not even, I understand you got Shai out there who's having an awesome season. But if we want to get nuanced about the game, guys who play with an open offense. With shooting centers, they have an easier time scoring the ball. Can I just say that one more time so that we all understand it? Guys who play with a shooting center have an easier time scoring the ball. If you don't understand that, then you got to get caught up on the game. That's the difference between the scoring today and years prior, which is why when you start comparing eras and start comparing specific players, you better be looking at this aspect of the game's change, or this aspect of the game has changed when you're making these comparisons. Because guys used to have to score with two or three people around them at all times. Now, because you have, if you look at the Bucks game, if you listen to this podcast, it's more than likely you watch the Bucks game. They have a center and a backup center who come into the game and they shoot threes. They stand outside. When you do that, there's no, you don't have the same defense at the front of the rim. Defense has to rotate to the front of the rim, leaving open shooters that they don't want to leave open. Right? So they're a step late. They're not sitting there waiting on you. It's the reason why European players keep saying it's easier to score in the NBA than in Europe. It's because in Europe they play zone and you can stand in the middle the whole game. So Shai plays on a team where they have shooting centers. So he doesn't have to compete with people at the rim the way Jalen does. It's harder for Jalen to score in the Knicks offense because of the personnel with Mitchell Robinson and Precious Achiuwa being at center, Hartenstein asterisk on him because he actually can shoot threes, so we can blame Tibbs for the fact that he's not outside shooting threes and not the personnel, right? So between all of those factors, he is always competing with contests at the rim that other teams don't have to compete with. So his scoring, especially at his efficiency, is weighted heavier than even a guy like Shai, who is amazing. And I'm not taking away from Shai. I'm just saying if you switch places, Shai would still be awesome, but he would have to be as awesome as Brunson, as opposed to Brunson having to be as awesome as Shai, which is why Brunson is the MVP candidate over Shai. Because if you put Brunson over there at OKC, he'd be shooting 58% from the field and leading the league in scoring, more than likely. Okay, that's how awesome Jalen has been. Jalen shoots more threes and get out of here. I don't want to hear it. The only competition for MVP is Joker, and Joker is amazing. He's all world. Say what you want to say. I'm not going to sit here and try to make an argument for Joker not being MVP, other than the fact that Joker's kind of been on cruise control for a lot of the season. He's a great, great player, and he's had a great, great season, but he has kind of been on cruise control. And what he's had to do to elevate his team is way different than what Brunson has had to do to keep his team in contention. Playoff contention. Way more. There's been no Jamal Murray over here. So if we're going to be, if we're really, you know what, I should do a whole Jalen for MVP show. I'm going to do a Jalen for MVP show. I'm going to do it within the next 48 hours. I hope I'm not lying to you. And I'm going to promote the hell out of it because I think this man, he's not even in the top 10 on the Kia MVP ladder. What are y'all doing over there? What are they doing in Kia? What are y'all doing? How is he not top 10? You guys got Anthony Davis on the MVP ladder and not Jalen Brunson? They're fighting to stay out of the play-in. Maybe I should take that back because kind of Knicks kind of doing the same thing. But it's different because there's no LeBron James over here. Get out of here. How are you MVP of the league and LeBron James playing on your team? Can y'all tell me how can LeBron James be on your team and you be an MVP candidate? What are we talking about? What? Huh? Can we be serious? Is that a serious thing? He's an MVP, plain and simple. He's carrying his team. Praise him. Praise him. Praise him. The Knicks gutted this out in the second half, locked down defensively. They did everything they could do. Josh Hart can't. He hit a three in the game. Give him credit. He can't. He's both his wrists jacked up. Bogdanovich came in this game with his wrist jacked up. OG still can't shoot. Every time he hit, he takes a shot. At least it doesn't look like it did when he first came back, but he's just probably rusty at this point because he's not able to shoot. His shot is very flat. You're hoping that he can find his shot. But, you know, it doesn't surprise me that he can't shoot right now. It surprises me the Knicks are actually competitive and put, like, what did they put, 122 points on the board without OG being able to shoot and Josh Hart not being able to shoot. This is amazing stuff, right? Now, Bogdanovich, been playing well the last couple of weeks. Better, I should say. Better, better, better. Not well, better. He's had some decent games in there, and he played well. He saved them against the Bucks. He saved them. The non-Brunson minutes have been killing the Knicks, and I've been seeing a lot of talk about, oh, the Knicks need to improve in the non-Brunson minutes. Listen, water is wet, okay? No, the non-Brunson minutes have been a big deal ever since the RJ IQ trade for OG and Anobi, right? It's been the non-Brunson minutes have been an issue. That's what the Alec Burks and Bogdanovich trade was supposed to fix. And Alec Burks and Bogdanovich have been hot garbage. So what makes you think that that problem has been solved? Like, we all know it's a problem. Like, stop saying it's a problem. It's a personnel problem. They don't have anybody to actually score points during those minutes. That's not McBride's forte. When McBride gives you 29 points as a spot-up shooter, God bless him, but he doesn't create shots. That's not what he does. And he hit some big shots in this game last night, especially when he was matched up on Bobby Portis. I wish I knew what Bobby Portis said to him after the game because I didn't know about any previous relationship they had. But Bobby Portis had a whole lot to say to McBride after the game, positive stuff after the game. And I'm just nosy. I was curious. But there were some big shots from McBride in the game. Anytime he gives you those, when he gives you those 20 points, 25 points, 29 points, he's giving you games like that. It's a big bonus. And he's got to give it to you when Brunson's not on the floor, not just when he's on the floor, because obviously Brunson is helping create those shots. Like, there's a difference, I told you, between somebody who creates shots and someone who benefits from someone else creating shots, right? Brunson is a shot creator. He's a points producer, whereas McBride, for the most part, 90% of his baskets are coming from it being created by other people, right? So his inability to consistently create shots for himself is why the non-Brunson minutes are such a struggle. But tonight, Bogdanovich was on point, and he's been a little bit more efficient the last few games. And I want to ask guys who are very good at finding these kind of stats, like Rit Holzman and DP and guys like that. I want to know if Bogdanovich been getting stubbed? I think he gets stubbed at the quarter change now, whereas before it seemed like he was getting stubbed mid quarter. And I don't know this for a fact. I guess I can kind of look that up. I can probably look that up. I feel like that Bogdanovich starting has been starting at the quarter change. as opposed to mid-quarter, and that might coincide with him playing a little bit better. It's almost like you're starting the game in the second quarter as opposed to coming in the middle of the quarter. Maybe it's not a big difference, maybe a psychological difference, maybe I just made that whole thing up. I'm gonna take some time to look into it, but Bogdanovich has been a little bit better for the Knicks, and he was awesome here in this Milwaukee game. And if you get some semblance of this from Bogdanovich without the bonehead plays that he's been making, because that's the other thing, is he's made bonehead plays on top of struggling, he's making bonehead plays. You also saw that Alec Burks wasn't playing. Alec has wet the bed. He's done. I think he might be done. The Knicks winning this game might signify that Alec Burks is now done. And I wish I understood what happened with Alec Burks. I wish I did. I have no idea what happened, but I wish I did. Because he came here and he's been terrible. And there were a lot of people who said that this was a terrible trade and Alec Burks sucks. And now they look like geniuses. It's just like, I have a hard time when you say somebody is bad at something and they haven't been bad at it, and then they start being bad at it, and you say that I told you they were bad at it, and it was like, it makes my head hurt because it's like, but he wasn't bad at it when he said he was bad at it. He started being bad, and now you're claiming that you called it, and it's like, it kills me. But Burks has been bad. Let's just all agree on that. He's been a complete and utter disaster, and I'm not overstating that. More so than Bogdanovich, who was also, for the most part, and again, he's been playing better, but he was being like a complete dud. These guys throwing a ball out of bounds. Like, there was a turnover in the Bulls game where it's like Alec tried to turn the ball over twice in 15 seconds. It was like he was doing it on purpose. I don't know if he has Lyme disease or something. Like, I don't know what. He's encephalitis. He meningitis. He just looks like he's low energy and just not locked in at all. Is this in a fog? Is he smoking before the game? In that Bulls game, he tried to inbound the ball and almost turned the ball over in inbound. And then he got the ball, brought it up court, and then turned the ball over the first pass he made. It was making the most obvious pass on the face of the earth. Like, what are you doing, man? Are you like, it's like he can't get right all of a sudden. And he was always prone to like making stupid mistakes here and there, but that wasn't like his MO. It's like it's like he's only in the minutes of, in the game for 5 minutes, and you're getting like three bonehead plays in 5 minutes. Goodness, pull it together. I don't think he played at all tonight. I don't think he played at all tonight. Let me just check the box score real quick, and I think I'm just wasting my own time here and wasting yours too, because I'm quite sure he didn't play any time, and if he did, it was like a minute. Right? So here we go. Burks, DNP. And that might be the new normal. That might be the new normal here. Now, one thing that I was concerned about was Precious. I've been right on Precious. I've been right on him. I told you I think Precious plays better the more minutes he plays, and it seems like if he starts playing less minutes, you're gonna start seeing a less effective Precious. It seems like he just has a hard time getting himself to an intensity level that he plays best at when he's not playing many minutes, and that's played out. That's since Mitch has returned, that has played out completely, 100%. With OG back, I knew Precious's minutes was going to be, his minutes are going to suffer. And you can see that coming. And the problem is, it hurts his effectiveness on the court when he plays less minutes. It's just, that's been Precious's problem in his career. That's why the Precious you've been seeing for the Knicks has not been the Precious you've been seeing with other teams, because he hasn't been playing those minutes. When he plays a lot of minutes, he plays better. It's as simple as that. It's as simple as that. Now, one thing that we talked about a bunch of times is that Precious is better defensively, and he got better defensively at backup center. Give him credit. He got better, but he's small. He's not as big as you think he is. He's not a big guy, right? And he told you he's not accustomed to playing center, and he had gotten better at playing center. He had gotten better at protecting the rim. I give him the utmost credit for improving in that facet, but he was better offensively when he plays the five, but not as good defensively as he is when he plays the four. But when he plays the four, the Knicks have spacing issues, especially when Josh Hart is on the floor. And now with OG back and him not shooting, there's no real place for him to play the four at all because he's such a drag on the offense, even though defensively he is a positive on the floor. So you know now that if Randle did return, it's unlikely that he would have remained in the rotation because you're seeing him out of the rotation with Bogdanović playing better. As long as Bogdanović is playing, like, he's able to be functional on the court, you're not going to see Precious because the Knicks have too hard of a time scoring. Now, you're seeing improvements from Mitch. I see a lot of people criticizing Mitchell Robinson. As much as I've told you that, you know, Hartenstein was the better player, I know what Mitch does well, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, but Mitch is getting better. He's getting his feet under him a little bit more balance. You know, he had a big block in the game. He's not able to get his hands on the rebounds. You know, Alan Hahn on the broadcast talked about this. He's tipping the ball a lot as opposed to, there's a lot of balls that he would have grabbed. His hands are just not there. He doesn't have great hands to begin with. Yeah. So, you know, you have to play him in small doses. Like, you have to know when to call it on Mitchell. And I think Tibbs is going to get to that place. I think he is at that place. You know, he rode him. He started playing well in that second half, and he rode him as long as he could. But, you know, it was time to get Hartenstein back in the game because Hartenstein getting that ball in the middle of the paint and hitting those floaters, beautiful, beautiful. That's something that Mitch can't do. That's something that Hartenstein is doing that is just, it's invaluable what he's doing. It really is. You have to have him on the floor. You're talking about a guy, you want him out there for 40 minutes because of how much more he can give you offensively. But you don't play him 40 minutes if he's going to be tired because he starts to, you know, he starts to wane as a effective player when he starts to get tired. Mitchell gets in there. He keeps things up defensively. He gets his head in the game. If he can get you a basket or two, you take it and you run with it. If Mitchell is not a factor in the game, if it's not the right matchup for him, then you get Precious in there. You know, Tibbs has to be, he has to be in kind of like in that zone. You know, there were a couple threes hit when Mitch was in the game. And I'm not going to blame it on him. Mitch, you need to close out with your hands up. The key to close out is have your hands up as you're approaching the closeout. I think that's a key difference in how people close out. Don't close out with your hands down and then put it up late. Keep your hands up as you close out and maximize the length of your arms and your close out, your contest. You know, Bobby Porter shouldn't have been shooting so freely with you around him like that, but I'm not going to pick on him like that. He looks like he's getting better. They're going to need him in certain matchups, and you would assume that the Bucks wasn't a matchup that they would need him in with all of the shooting centers, but he was a factor in the game. Especially in that early fourth quarter where Giannis was starting to come back. He was about to be aggressive, and he was able to slow Giannis down a little bit. You're going to need Mitchell Robinson against some of these matchups. It just can't be 40 minutes of Mitchell Robinson. It can't be 35 minutes. It can't be 30 minutes, all right, because he has too many limitations. You need Hartenstein for the rest of that time. And if you don't have Hartenstein, you take a hit defensively, and you have Precious in the game because you're going to get a little bit more offense at the five position from Precious than you will Mitch. So awesome game all around. I don't sit around talking about Jalen Brunson all the time because everybody else does it. Jalen, you're a superhero. You really are. I've never seen anything like it. In my time as a Knick, I've never seen anyone do what Jalen does. You know, people are gonna say Carmelo Anthony. Carmelo Anthony never did what Jalen did. He never did it. He never did it. I don't care what anyone says. Never did it. It was all done in a different way. Right, he's scoring on all three levels, and he's creating the shot. He's not bogging down the offense. He doesn't have a whole lot of help most of the time. You know, when Carmelo was doing it and he didn't have a ton of help, he bogged down the offense on top of everything else, and his game was very predictable. You can't predict what Jalen is gonna do, and you just don't know what he's gonna do. He's just scoring on everybody doing it. And he's not getting a whole lot of help while he's doing it. And I never, people, you saw Dudley, I keep saying Jared Dudley saying when he guarded Carmelo, it was like you don't stress it. You know what shot he's gonna take, and towards the end of his career, not in the beginning and middle, but towards the end. And that's what we saw a lot as Knicks fans. Like, you just contest it, and you're like, all right, we'll live with that 45% shot. Jalen Brunson shooting 54% from the field. You've never seen anything like that. Okay? You've never seen it. Unless you want to talk about Richie Guerin, you've never seen anything like this as a Knicks fan. Give him all the credit in the world. At Sports Ethos on Twitter, at Ethos Knicks, Andre Gallagher at The Watchers 7. Until next time.